You're listening to Dude Podcast with JC and Will. Put some pep in that step. Enjoy the show.
Hi, dudes. I'm JC.
And I'm Will. And you're listening to...
Dude.
Yes, you are. Thanks for joining us today, Dudies. And well, you know Dudies, what? I realize we're both wearing black. What does your shirt say? Stand with farts? Stand with facts. Your string is blocking it. I don't know why that's where my brain went. I'm like, oh, he's got one of those funny shirts on. Stand with farts.
Stand with farts.
Stand with it. That's an NPR shirt, huh?
I stand with farts. I stand with farts.
Somebody's got to stand for it.
I got to stand. I listen, the farts have been oppressed for far too long. And really, if you think about it, if I'm going to be very honest with you, I've oppressed plenty of farts in my day. And that's the problem.
It's a history you're not proud of, but here you are today. You've learned your lesson, and now you stand with the farts. I'm proud of you, buddy.
Stand with facts is what it says. But I am really, really looking forward to this time because this is a special episode. One of the first episodes that we did, we reviewed an episode of Seventh Heaven and broke it down. And we were talking about, you know, reviewing something else, but we're trying to figure out what a movie or a TV show or what. And I think you nailed it. And you said, why don't we do a movie? And why don't we do a movie that like kind of shaped us?
Both of us, right? Yeah.
And it's funny because I think people could be like, oh, okay, a movie that shaped you. Maybe it was like Forrest Gump, or maybe it was like, you know, Shawshank, or maybe it was Saving Private Ryan, or, you know, Mr. Holland's Opus, or something that like really like, you know, helped shape you as a young person and like, you know, try to teach you how to be a man. And that, no, folks, that is not the movie we're going to discuss. The movie that we're about to discuss, I think, honestly, it's in the top three of probably most influential, maybe influential pieces of media to actually like morph my thinking, how I think about things that are funny.
Yeah.
How I think about just how things work. And that film is the 2001 hit
Zoolander.
His name is Zoolander. Derek Zoolander.
Here's the thing. We both rewatched it to prepare for this. And as I was, I probably haven't watched it in a good maybe 10 years or so, maybe longer. And it's even better than I remember. Like, it's still so good. It holds up. It's still funny. It still, like, has so many moments in it that feel like golden little nuggets. It's such a great movie.
I would echo the same thing. Let's take a moment. Let's take a step back. Let's kind of explain where we were in life when this movie came out and why this movie also was so big in our lives.
First, before we do that, I do want to, if anybody hasn't watched it, I want you to describe the premise of this movie because the idea of it is so crazy and insane, but yet when you watch it, it's such a brilliant concept. I love how wacky this idea is. This is before AI, where it can think of this crazy concept, but it's absurd. The idea of this movie is there's like this secret group of like, you know, modeling execs or clothing execs, and they have basically decided that the Prime Minister of Malaysia, he wants to end child labor laws, and they don't like that because then that means their clothing is going to be more expensive to produce. So they decide, they've done this throughout history. In the movie, they decide, they talk about like JFK assassination was done by models, and like, you know, all these like conspiracies have actually been secretly executed by models. And what they want to do is have a model kill the Prime Minister of Malaysia. Why, you might ask, why did they take that twist and turn? It's because models are dumb in theory, but they're also in peak physical shape. So they have the ability to essentially like execute something that tactical, right? So here is Derek Zoolander, and he's at the he's kind of reached the hump of his career, and they decide that man, that idiot model, he's our man. We're going to manipulate him to kill the Prime Minister of Malaysia so that child labor laws still can flourish in Malaysia. It's a crazy, crazy concept. And I just want to acknowledge that it takes a really creative human being to come up with something that insane.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So, brilliant. Again, if you haven't seen Zoolander, don't listen to us. Please go sit down and watch it. So let me do a couple things. I'm going to kind of explain where we were at in life. And then there are a lot of really interesting things that happened at the release of this movie, the timing of this movie, and some things that I want to walk through. And then we'll jump in here as I'm going through. So this movie came out. I didn't realize, I don't think I put everything together on the timing. So this movie came out when we were in eighth grade, right?
No. Oh, yes, you're right. I'm sorry. Yes. It came out in eighth grade.
It would have been eighth grade, which in my opinion is like one of the, I mean, of course, middle school and high school are formative years, but like eighth grade is like, I kind of feel like you're kind of making that transition from like kid to like, you're really in it. Like this is like, where I think your brain's starting to figure out. It's a very pivotal time for young people. Now, I want to tell you the date when this came out, because again, 2001, oh my God, the world changed, right? September 28th, 2001 is when this came out. So, wow, kind of interesting in and of itself, because here, you know, obviously September 11th happens, the world completely changes, we're all glued to TV, and there's
17 days after a massive terrorist attack.
Exactly.
They released this insane movie.
They released this absolutely bonkers movie. The weird thing was, you know what? I looked this up. I had always thought it was a dud. I had always thought that it didn't make any money. But upon looking at the reviewing just what's available online, I think the movie cost $28 million to make. It grossed $60 million. So yeah, I mean, hey, it's not a Marvel movie. You're not expected to make $100 million. So you'd think that's pretty darn good. So the other thing that's really interesting too. So Derek Zoolander, right? Ben Stiller, right? This is 2001. I believe this is after Meet the Parents, right? So he's done, There's Something About Mary, Meet the Parents. He is finally kind of arrived as a movie star at this point, right, in his career. He had done the, so a little bit of history with Ben Stiller. Ben Stiller had done the Ben Stiller Show.
Hi, I'm Ben Stiller. Welcome to the show.
That was on MTV. He actually won an Emmy for that show. And I've gone back and watched some of those. Brilliant. Hilarious. Super, super funny. Jeannie Garofalo's on that. Andy Dick is on that. That's where some of these guys come out of. He does impressions. He's like, it was brilliant. It got canceled after one season. But it won an Emmy. So you kind of recognize like there was brilliance there. You know, Ben Stiller he's a Nepo baby. Dad and mom, you know, Jerry Stiller. I think it's Maude Stiller. It might be the mom's name. His mother, they were like a comedy duo. And so they bred this, you know, again, this Nepo baby comedy powerhouse known as Ben Stiller. And so he wrote, directed, and starred in this movie. And a little bit more interesting, too. So the character of Derek Zoolander, I guess, came out of a sketch that was done on VH1. Used to broadcast some sort of like actual fashion awards show. And so he did a couple sketches about a fictitious model named Derek Zoolander.
Hi, I'm Derek Zoolander, president and model and founder and dean and CEO of the Derek Zoolander University of Modeling for Men.
And that was how this character kind of eventually came to be. Couple other quick just notes setting up the movie itself that I thought were fascinating. So movie runtime. I always think this is like the most underrated important feature in film. 89 minutes. Chef's kiss. I feel like every movie should be 80, like 90 minutes. That's the goal. What are we doing with these like two and a half hours? It is. It's absolutely picture perfect. Mm-hmm. The other thing was it was a VH1 film. So I don't know how many films VH1 did, but it was like, you know, it was done. It's a movie that came out when we were in eighth grade. We probably were looking for some humor in such a weird time. And man, this movie just hit me and Will at the perfect time, and we thought this was the greatest film we had ever seen. I didn't see it in a movie theater.
The whole eighth grade year, I don't know if you recall. First off, you and I watched this together. I don't know if you remember that. You and I watched it at my house together. We rented it. And I have a very, very vivid memory of sitting in my parents' den watching it. And us howling at it. I remember specifically you crying laughing at the scene where she says that she was bulimic when she was a kid. And Derek Zoolander says,
"You can read minds."
When I was in seventh grade, I became bulimic.
You can read minds.
I think maybe top five hardest I've ever seen you laugh. Like, you were crying laughing. And I will never forget that.
Here's the funny thing. I don't remember the first time we rented it, but, and this is no exaggeration, I think we watched that movie like 100 times. And that poor tape probably was like on its like, it was like probably like bare, we probably had to like hold it together with like, you know, scotch tape and whatever to make sure that, because it wasn't even a DVD.
Yeah.
It was a VHS. And, dude, I think we watched the movie 100 times. I literally, the scary thing is when I rewatched the movie, I don't think there was like a line or any, there was nothing that I heard. Now, the beauty of the film was I did find some things that I didn't find when I was younger, but not the lines. Same. It was more subtle things that were like in the background or things like that. So, one of the sad things, you know, it's funny, like with streaming now, like the sad, like lost component of streaming is you don't get director commentary anymore, which was something that no one ever like utilized it, right? It was like one of these great Easter eggs that were like on every DVD, but no one ever listened to it. Mm-hmm. But when I went back, I was interested in listening to the director commentary. And what's incredible with the director commentary is, again, Ben Stiller's directed this. So it's Ben Stiller the whole time talking about the film. And you can find that on YouTube. Cool. If you YouTube Zoolander director commentary and you want to sync it up and like rent it on Amazon or watch it, you can sync up the audio. And you get to find out a lot of really interesting things. Other weird thing about Ben Stiller, straight up, I don't know how this guy is this brilliant comedian, because like, it I know how he's a brilliant comedian when the camera's on, but man, when the camera's not rolling, he's about as dull as a potato. Mm. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen an interview with him or ever like heard him when he's like, I mean, he's about as like low energy as
he's not a goofball, that's for sure.
No, it's really bizarre.
He takes all that stuff very seriously. Like he's, and I respect that about him. But like Zoolander was about as serious for him as, you know, or what's the show, the Adam Scott show that he directs and writes,
Severance. Yes.
So yeah, but you can tell that like he cares very much about the details, and it shows in Zoolander because all the details of it are just so. That's going back to what you were saying, like you go back and watch it and we know every line, we know what's going to happen, but then you start paying attention to the details and you're like, man, oh man, he really got it all so
it's perfect. Brilliant. The thing that I think I really appreciate about this film, and this is where I don't want to pick on him because I love Adam Sandler. But I am going to. And what I will say is I think Adam's use of cameos is just like there are these cameos and you see it, especially like, I don't know if you saw Happy Gilmore 2 or his later stuff, it just feels so like, was that necessary to have, you know, Jason Kelsey in that? Or was it necessary to have, you know, I don't know, Larry Bird or, you know, whoever is in the film, it's like, It just feels kind of excessive and feels like there's not a point for that person. And what made this film awesome, because there's so many cameos. I mean, this film has, 30, 40 cameos at least.
And they're really short, but they play well with... There's just so many great... Like, for instance, Gary Shandling's in it.
Do not be distracted by the beautiful celebrities.
That was such a... And it was a split second, but it's like, oh, that was Gary Shandling. What a hysterical casting choice.
Yeah, so we'll talk about some of the other cameos. So a couple things on the cast, a couple notes on the casting that I thought were absolutely hilarious. So apparently the role... Of Hansel, by the way, his name is Hansel McDonald. I didn't know that. Did you know that his last name was McDonald? I had no idea. It's Hansel McDonald is the full character's name. That role was basically written for Owen Wilson. Like they actually designed, they were like, God, we have to have Owen Wilson. He has to accept this role because like he was kind of completely like thought of to play. To play the role itself. Mugatu initially was not going to be Mugatu. Mugatu was going to be played by Andy Dick. And the funny thing was Andy Dick had a scheduling conflict. And so then 2001. Yeah. So the funny thing is that's Will Ferrell was on SNL. Mm-hmm. Will Ferrell was kind of just coming up because if you think about it, 2001, he still wasn't like the movie star Will Ferrell, you know, at that time. And the funny thing is once you know that like it was initially written for Andy Dick and you see Will Ferrell playing that role, you kind of get it. Like it kind of makes like Will Ferrell. I don't think anybody could do the role of Mugatu better than Will Ferrell in retrospect. But I do think the brilliance of it is I think it's Will Ferrell playing Mugatu, playing Andy Dick. Like, I think he has this layer of like, okay, this is this character Mugatu, but what's my impression of Andy Dick playing? I think there's like three levels going on, and I think that's what gives, because Mugatu is such a straight, like just the way he'll talk. Yes, yes, Derek, and that's why I brought you here today. And like the cadence that he has, how he runs and how he gets excited, and like he's kind of androgynous, but like he's kind of, is he gay, is he straight, you don't really know, like he's just he's all these things, and like it's incredible, it's absolutely hilarious. Okay, so Jake Gyllenhaal almost played Hansel. because there was a scheduling conflict, and then eventually Owen was like, no, I can do it. But like, I think they had in the wings Jake Gyllenhaal, which would have been really bizarre.
By the way, how cool is Hansel's character? Like, I was watching that movie and I thought, like, I think I like Hansel more now than I ever did. Like, I love the way he talks, the way he describes things. I love his house. Like, how cool is that man's house? And like the house rolls with. He rides around on a scooter. Like, everything about Hansel was cool.
And I think the other thing that's really funny about it too, Will, when I think about it, to your point, is like fashion's so stupid. Like, it's so dumb. Like, it's like, okay, like, you're wearing a hat and you're wearing, like, it's like, it is such a silly construct. And so this film does such a good job at just poking fun of, like, what is fashion? Why do we take it seriously? Like, you know, is any of this actually important at all? And I think they just do a really good job of laughing at it. But also, like, there are some subtle, like, good points within it. And there is, like, you know, I think that's also what makes this. I think the two things that make this film so great is, first off, the laughs keep coming, super layered. There's jokes upon jokes upon jokes upon jokes. And, like, there was never, like, a real deep lesson being learned. And I like that. Like, it was just silliness the entire time. And the other thing is, you'll see the Prime Minister of Malaysia throughout the film. And to your point, too, Will, that was really funny, was this is pre-AI, right? AI has only been around at this point for, like, 6, 12, 18 months, I don't know, not very long. But whatever they've done to, like, and this is throughout the film too, to superimpose either Ben Stiller's face or Owen Wilson's face or the Prime Minister onto other things is absolutely hysterical because it's not super well done. And the Prime Minister perpetually has a hilarious face. Like, a very silly, like, ooh, like, the entire film, which is really, like, he's such a sweet man. And you just, like, the fact that he's in all these high-stakes situations is just silliness in and of itself.
Yeah.
So we go, and then, I don't know, Will, so, like, the other, the scene as you're watching it, right, and how the plot starts to unfold too, is basically Derek Zoolander is at the top of his career, but he's kind of, to your point, like, on about to go, like, he's sort of an aging supermodel, and Hansel, who is Owen Wilson, is played by this, you know, young up and coming supermodel. There is this giant fashion show, and that's where, you know, I think that first scene is just such a great thing for painting, because that first scene is kind of what the whole movie is too. Like, in the sense of there's a ton of cameos, there's a ton of, like, silly things kind of going on. And ultimately, Derek, you find out he's a moron because he doesn't win this award for Model of the Year. It ends up going to Hansel, and he's disgraced after that. And then the plot unfolds itself. But two things I wanted to discuss with you in particular about that. Well, not even two. There's probably even more than that in that first opening big scene itself, because it's so hilarious. The cameos are awesome. Donald, the president of the United States,
is in Zoolander.
Is in Zoolander. He's in, like, he's actually probably, I think he might be the first cameo in Zoolander.
One of them, for sure.
That's absolutely just that. There's a ton of celebrities. It's so, so funny. But the other thing I thought was really, really funny about that award show episode, or that award show, is, and we quote this all the time because it's, like, low key, I think, one of the funniest parts of the film. Is Fabio.
You consider me the best actor / model, and not the other way around.
It's kind of scary that film, the film itself, is what, 24 years old at this point?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and you think about when they shot it, so really, you're probably talking about 25 years at this point since they shot it. How many of those people are still relevant? It's horrifying.
I mean, yeah, Natalie Portman, Lenny Kravitz.
If you have to say, like, funniest character, like, funniest pound-for-pound character in the film based upon how many lines they're given, who do you think that character is? Because I walked away being like, I know who mine is, for sure, and it's kind of a surprise.
Gosh, that's tough, because you can make a case for Dave Duchovny, who's the hand model.
But then let me tell you real quick who my favorite character pound for pound is, and then let's progress the plot, and I'll let you keep going. So, Jerry Stiller as Ball's models, hilarious. Like, because he doesn't have that many lines. Every line he has is hysterical. Like, It's dirty. It's inappropriate. It's hilarious. So anyway, Ben Stiller goes up to receive the award. And it's not his award because he's a moron. He's stupid. And it really should go to Hansel. And he's so disgraced that he, you know, he's gone from the height, you know, the highest of highs, being on Time Magazine, to being a loser because, you know, his moment of being the top model is over. And that then leads to the scene that you described, which is, I guess, describe again what happens with his roommates.
So he goes back and he's kind of sulking at his place, right? His model buddies are trying to, like, you know, console him, and they say, "You know what you really need in this time of need?" And he's like, "What? Orange mocha frappuccino."
Know what could really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Yeah.
I love about that scene, again, we talk about watching it when we're older and kind of noticing little things. My favorite thing about that particular scene is, you know, in movies, when they show a certain moment and they're trying to kind of glorify the moment, they're trying to make it seem like it's like this euphoric rush for the character. They want you to bring you into it. And, you know, they're dancing around the song. It's going slow-mo. The frames are really tight. So you're seeing them have fun. And all of a sudden, they zoom back. It looks stupid. And
that's right.
You see onlookers staring, and I'm like, what?
Why are these guys? That
and
is
that
true.
Was a brilliant moment of just like, cue off the music, stop doing slow-mos, just show how absurd it is, and then go back to the music and the
slow-mo. How funny would it be if you pulled up at a gas pump and you saw four adult-age men spraying each other with gasoline and just giggling? You'd be like, what the hell is this? Which is, I think, exactly the purpose. But anyway, they blow up and they die tragically in a freak gasoline fight accident, which is, again, one of my also favorite things. It's not like, oh, they died in an accident. They keep framing it as a freak gasoline fight accident, which is just hilarious because that's exactly what it was. But it's just like, yeah, it's so funny. But the funeral is excellent because you have Derek, you know, leading it. He's wearing all white. He's wearing this ridiculous outfit.
He's wearing all white.
These guys die, and there's like, it just becomes about Derek retiring. It has nothing to do, no acknowledgement. Like, there really is no acknowledgement of these characters throughout the film. Really, they don't get, like, there's very little, like, fanfare for them.
The only thing that Zoolander talks about his friends and that, you know, that you see in the movie is he says, you know, all these guys were like brothers to me. And I don't mean actual brothers, but I mean it in the way that black people use it. It's like, that's what you want to say?
It's just so...
What a stupid thing to say. And then, yeah, so he starts making it about himself.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, and then that's the only reference to those characters who died, who kicked this whole thing off. You know, once Derek has quit the industry, right, and he's down on his luck, he decides to go back to visit his family. His dad basically tells him, you know, hey, you know, you abandoned your family because you're a model and you should be, you know, with your family working in the coal mines because my dad did that. My dad said it was, again, it's a great trope because it's like one of those, like, you went and followed your dream and you made us look silly. But my favorite part of that whole thing, and one that made me laugh so hard with John Voight, was so they're at this bar and they're watching football, and a commercial comes on, and Derek is in fact in the commercial.
He's promoting, you know, water, by the way.
Yeah, he's promoting water.
The quote from his a commercial for this water. Sit and think about what he said. He said, moisture is the essence of wetness, and wetness is the essence of beauty. That's insane. That's such an insane thing to say. Like, what does that mean? He was promoting water as a mermaid. I just love that.
And he looks absolutely ridiculous. And my favorite thing is John Voight, when he gets upset, he goes, what do you think? You're making me proud? Put prancing around there in your underwear? Well, your wiener hanging out for the world to see?
Prancing around in your underwear with your wiener hanging out for everyone to see?
I think that maybe was the first thing that made me cry laughing.
It's just funny the way he said, like, I just thank the Lord your mother didn't live to see her son as a mermaid. And it's just...
Merman! Merman! So then, as the plot, basically what that happens is Derek is so down on his luck, he gets a call, right, from Mugatu to try to kick off a new campaign, a new huge fashion campaign that he's going to be the prominent piece to, and he's going to be kind of named after him, called Derelict. The idea is like... trash. That's all the idea. It's like trash, homelessness, drug use. Like, that. These are all the inspiration behind the Derelict campaign, right?
I would argue that, like, young kids now, that's kind of their fashion, is a little
Derelict,
sloppy, a little dirty. Like, I don't know. It's not good. Fashion's not good now.
No.
And it's kind of reminiscent of this Derelict campaign.
The Derelict campaign. But I think one of my favorite things, this is where you really get introduced to Mugatu, and you get to see Will Ferrell just be absolutely incredible. And the thing I couldn't take my eyes off, Will, as I rewatched this, was the dog. The dog Will Ferrell is carrying, the poodle, throughout the film. I don't know if that dog was on drugs or the dog. It literally, like, barely, it looks fake. It's breathing. It's clearly a real dog. But if you just watch the dog, I can't stop laughing at the dog itself, who has little outfits, who's wearing apparently what is a wig. But Will Ferrell's interaction with his assistant in that scene, that first scene too, prior to him showing Derek the Center for Kids Who Want to Learn How to Read Good, hysterical.
It's one of my favorite. It is truly one of my favorite quotes from the whole movie. I mean, I just quoted it a couple minutes ago, but the whole latte scene where he takes a sip of his latte and he freaks out and throws the latte on his assistant and says, "Are you not aware they get farty and bloated with a foamy latte?"
Hilarious. And then how he runs over to the to the,
that's the Will Ferrell touch to the character. You know, that was Will Ferrell. That was not a Ben Stiller direction. Will Ferrell's like, no. He needs to run funny. We need this.
How he runs is just, again, there's little subtle things that he does in that with that character that are just sheer brilliance.
And just look at his hair and his facial hair.
Ben Stiller said it's his real hair. They said he was growing his hair out and they made him bleach it.
Is that true?
And that's his, I heard it's his real hair.
That's impressive. I just, everything about that character is so good.
All right. So, basically at this point, right, Derek, another great line is there's this, I guess to try to entice Derek to join part of Derelict or be part of Derelict, he wants to, he says, Mugatu, Will Ferrell's character says, "Hey, we're going to give you a philanthropic thing. We're going to help you, you know, we have a center called the Derek Zoolander House for Children Who Can't
Derek
Read Good.
Is Derek, Derek Zoolander Center for Kids Who Can't Read Good and Want to Learn to Do Other Things Good Too."
Yes. Yes. And it's great because there's this little model of it. And I don't know why I thought this was so funny, because maybe as a kid, like, I did always have a problem, like, understanding, like, it was always weird to me whenever you see, like, models of things and be like, what? And no, this is the smaller version of what it is going to be. And so for him to not even understand that that was not large enough, and for him to suggest it needs to be three times bigger than this, and breaking the model.
You're talking about a 3D model of the building that this
yes
center will be, not like a model, like,
yes, like, yes, excuse me, like an actual physical model of the building in which, again, Mugatu is using to entice Derek Zoolander to be like, hey.
And Derek gets enraged because he feels like, come on guys, the building needs to be at least three times bigger than this. This is ridiculous.
Which I think is also, it's the only time I think in the whole film you see him mad, which is really funny too. Which is just a funny, like, sort of strange thing. So we already talked about, like, the idea of Derelict and how ridiculous it is and gross it is. So he ends up going to this day spa, which is where they end up brainwashing people. And then, funny enough, our friend who couldn't play Mugatu, Andy Dick, is in fact in the movie as a masseuse for Derek Zoolander in this part of the film where he's getting, you know, he's supposed to get like a massage and all this stuff. And then he ends up getting brainwashed as he goes to this day spa that's like in a very questionable area.
It's pretty fascinating because you cannot tell it's Andy Dick.
And then I was also told that you know, in that scene, there is a moving weenie, if you will. There's a scene where, again, there's a scene where he's getting a massage and you see Derek, you don't see Derek's dinghy, but
you see the tent that he's making with his nether regions. And for some reason, Andy Dick has a little broom and he's trying to swat away this.
And it moves. It moves like a snake.
It moves like a little animal dodging.
And that was a great scene. And on the director commentary, they wrote that it was like a puppet. They had like some guy who was like moving like a tiny like puppet robot that was the fake Derek Zoolander weenie. But the thing I wanted to at least kind of end today's episode on was, I think, one of the most low-key, hilarious parts of the movie, which is how Derek gets brainwashed, right? So, yeah. So they use this song. Who's it by? Relax, Don't Do It.
Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Frankie Goes to Hollywood, which I think they were like a one-hit wonder. I think it was their only song. And when that song plays, you know, he goes into this sort of like, they also concurrently watch this film that's supposed to brainwash Derek to be able to, you know, again, eventually murder the Prime Minister of Malaysia, is funny beginning to end.
Yeah. And if you have the DVD, they actually have the full length of that video. It's pretty wild.
Will Ferrell is dressed as a kid, but he's dressed as a kid in like a painting you would see in like the 1800s, like a wealthy, like affluent.
You know, his name?
Little Cletus.
Little Cletus, and he has a little lollipop.
And he has these curls. He looks, actually, you know who he looks like, Will? He looks like Little Debbie.
He looks exactly like Little Debbie.
He looks like little,
how you think Little Debbie would talk.
Hi, Derek. I'm Little Cletus.
I'm here to tell you the truth about child labor laws. They're silly and outdated.
They're silly and outdated. And the best, too, is they have these images that correlate with what he's explaining. And there are these kids holding signs that say, "We want to work." We like these kids that are sad because they can't work. They want to have no regulations because these kids, they clearly want to work, you know?
According to Mugatu.
It starts as a video and then it becomes like a fever dream sort of sequence where they just start throwing in colors and things are spinning and it's like you don't really, you kind of lose identity of what's going on. And that's then where Derek wakes up in his apartment, I guess a week later after he's gone through this thorough brainwashing period. And now he is a trained killer. So if he hears Frankie Goes to Hollywood, he will instantly try to kill the Prime Minister of Malaysia. And we will end it right there and then wrap up the second half of Zoolander. But a couple things just to end with. Will, when you were rewatching this again, the first half, were you laughing? Were you like, I was stupid? You said you thought it held up better than you remember.
I think you and I are drawn to comedy that is silly. I mean, it can be stupid, but then when you can dissect it and realize, no, this is also really smart, and it was very thoughtfully crafted comedy, but in a stupid, silly way.
Every minute had something, like it was necessary,
yes.
And it was funny. And it had little Easter eggs that you can find throughout it that aren't just there for no reason. They're funny and add to the story. Or if they don't add to the story, because again, the story isn't really that important. It's they just add to you being like, that's funny. That's a funny extra thing that I think is really great.
I do want to say, I think you know, two of my favorite movies growing up were Dumb and Dumber and Zoolander. And I think, do you feel like the sequels?
Yes. Diminished it. I never saw Zoolander 2. I think
Zoolander 2 might be up there with one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It's so bad.
It looks like a cash grab. All it feels like is, hey, there's some actors who just want to, like, they don't, the product, we don't care about the product. We're just going to completely run on nostalgia, and we're all going to make line our pockets because it's nostalgia. And it's just sad. Like, has there ever been a sequel with that kind of a big gap? And it's worked.
That's a good question. I mean, Mission Impossible has some pretty big gaps in between films.
Maverick was good.
Haven't seen it.
Maverick was great. And that
Maverick
was Top Gun, too.
Top Gun.
And that was really, really good. But that is probably one of the only times in modern history I've seen that work, where they did this big gap, and then it's that. But anyway, duties, thank you for listening to us talk to this. We will talk about the second part of Zoolander, wrap it up, and then kind of pontificate a little bit more on the film itself, the impact that it had with us, maybe tell some stories about ways that we actually incorporate Zoolander into our lives. So I feel like that was another thing. Like, the film did not just, you know, live in the TVs and whatever. We had walk-offs. We would do, you know, fake breakdancing. We would do these things that throughout the film, Blue Steel, can't turn left, you know, all these things that, like, I don't know, that we incorporated into our lives because of this dumb, dumb movie. But yeah, it was great going down memory lane. So anyway, part two will come next, and we'll go from there. But thank you, duties. Have a great week. And it's not the sequel to Zoolander, thank God, but it's just the second part of Zoolander that we'll talk about next week.
In the meantime, go watch Zoolander. It's on Netflix. Check it out.
It's on Netflix. Go get it.
Have a great week.